Okay, good night of Shabbos. This week's Parsha is Parsha Shoftim, and the title of today's Shir is I'll Just Do It This One Time. So we know that we're very familiar with the way in which desire works, and that oftentimes when a person feels a desire for something and feels a compulsion to do something, we're going to, in every which way, try to rationalize what we're doing and get it past our conscience. And one way that does is you tell yourself, well, I'll just do one little thing, or what's the harm? I'll just look, or something along those lines. And there's a very interesting set of psukim in Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Aleph, in the beginning of that perek, where it describes the incident of David and Bathsheba, and the story, as we all know, is that that David saw Bathsheba and was very desirous of her, and ended up having relations with her. Of course, the Gemara in Shabbos, explains many mitigating factors, including that the way in which soldiers conducted themselves is before they went to war, they gave their wives a get so they wouldn't be agunas in case they were missing in action, which is reasonable. It's interesting to note, though, the Abarbanel is very clear and direct and very harsh in regard to David HaMelech. He says that those Gemaras are drushes, and their efforts on the part of the Gemara to see David in a good light. But he said that the Pshutus HaMikra is very clear that he committed these terrible averas, and he lists a whole bunch of them, which you could look at if you want to. And he says it's better, we accept that David did these averas, and then he did tshuva for them, and we know he did a lot of tshuva his whole life. Chotasi Negdi Summit, he was constantly atoning for it. And Barbanel says it's better to accept the fact that David did these averas, and that then he made a wholehearted and pure effort at tshuva. Anyway, it's very interesting that Barbanel pretty much stands alone in this position, but it's interesting because if you learn it his way, it means that even David HaMelech can commit some very serious errors, had committed some very serious errors, and then did tshuva. However, what I wanted to call to our attention is in the psukim, it starts out, it's pasuk beis to pasuk dalet, and there's a progression. So in pasuk beis it says, Vayhileis ha'erev, vayakum David mal mishkavo, vayishalech al gag beis ha'melech. David got up, he went to the roof, and from the roof, you would have a vantage point to see into the yards of other people who have lower buildings, who are on the ground floor. So vayar isha rechetes me'al ha'gag, and he saw this woman bathing, vayisha tova, tovas mar'em o'ot, and the woman was very beautiful. And then it goes on to Pasuk Gimel, Vayishlach David, and David sent, Vayidrosh Leisha, seeking after the woman. Vayomer, and it was told to him, Hello, Zos Bathsheba Bas Eliyom, Eshes Uriah Chiti, is this not Bathsheba? Anyway, the point is, David HaMelech goes looking to find out who she is, to see if she's a Pnuya, she's an Eshes Ish, according to some of Arshim. And then the next thing we know in Pasuk Dalet is Vayishlach David Malachim Vayikachea. David sent messengers to take her. Vaytavo Elov Vatishkav Ima. And he lay with her, etc., etc. So the interesting thing is in Pasuk Gimel, David's just asking after her. And although no Mefarshim say this explicitly that I know of, one can well imagine David's thinking in Pasuk Gimel is, well, let me just find out who she is. So at that moment, without David realizing it, he already was in the grips of his Yetzirah, right? But he rationalized, and he said, well, let's just find out about her. Maybe she's a Penuya, maybe whatever. So at the moment that he's doing that, he's already ensnared. And then before you turn around, even though it turns out that she is an Eish Yesish, which according to the Barbanel is literally so, according to the Chachamim, although she had a technical divorce, it still was not proper to be with her because she really was dedicated to Uriah, and it was Uriah's right and expectation when he returned from the war that he would continue to have his wife from before. But anyway, whatever the case may be, before you turn around, David HaMelech is ensnared in the sin. And it comes from the thought of, well, what's the harm? I'll just find out a little bit. I'll just take a look. Now, if you look in this week's Parsha, there's a discussion about shochad, about taking a bribe. And the pasuk says, it's Perek Tezayin, pasuk Yotes, Lo Satem Mishpat, Lo Sakir Panim, do not slant the din, don't show favoritism to anybody, Lo Sikach Shochad, do not take a bribe. Why should you not take a bribe? Ki HaShochad Ya'aver Enei Chachamim, the shochad makes the wise people blind, the salif divrei tzadikim, and it corrupts the words of the righteous. So, okay, the pasuk tells you you shouldn't take a bribe. It's pretty much self-explanatory. Rashi says an interesting thing here. Rashi says, "Kashochad yaver, mishekibel shochad mimenu." Once he accepts the bribe. So, in other words, you imagine the dayan. In his mind, someone's offering him some money or some other kind of favor in order to look favorably at the judgment and tilt the din in the favor of the person that's offering the bribe. So the dayan tells himself, what's the harm? I'll just take the money. I still could look at things objectively. If he wants to be a fool and give me money, what's the big deal? So he'll throw out his money, I'll make a little money, and the end is, I will administer justice anyway. What's the harm? I'll just take a little. So Rashi says, no, Mishikibel Shochan Mimenu, once he accepts the bribe, he Esher Shloyatas Libo Etzlo, it's impossible that his heart will not be turned, Lahapoch Veskuso, to begin to search in favor of the person who gave him the bribe, inappropriately. A dayan could, in theory, look in favor during the deliberations phase of the Bali Din, but not in a one-sided fashion. So what do we see here? Rashi says something very interesting. He says that there's something that's impossible. There's a certain yetzahara. There's a certain desire or compulsion that's impossible to control. That once the person already has a taste of the money, experiences the benefit of the money, at that point, no matter what he thinks, no matter who he is, no matter how wise he is, he no longer is able to control himself from looking in some way to slant the din in favor of the person that gave him the money. So the shochad is that it somehow, once you begin to get a taste of something, even though you tell yourself, well, I'll just take a little bit, I'll just take the money, and I will still administer justice, impossible. Rashi says it's impossible. It's impossible to withstand the desire and the taste of whatever good that this person had brought him. Now, Rav Chanan Wasserman, in his Kovetz Marmorim, speaks about this kind of shochad also. He raises the question, he says, really, how is it that anybody could be an atheist? How does it make any sense? You look at all the different intricacies and wonder of the whole Seder HaBriya, of the whole cycle of nature. Everywhere you turn, there's an incredible wisdom and detail manifesting an obvious intentional design. How is it that any intelligent person could possibly delude himself into thinking that there isn't an ultimate creator, someone that made all this? And he says the answer is the same thing that we say by shochad. Kashochad yaver eni pichim. The shochad makes a person blind. So what's the shochad in real life? The shochad is the taiva, is the desire. That there's a desire that a person has to not be controlled, to not feel beholden, to not feel like he has to restrain himself because there's somebody watching, because there's somebody who's in control, because there's somebody that has expectations. It would be much easier to just think, look, you know, we're here, and whatever feels good we can do, and that's it. And that desire to enjoy things and not to be in any way inhibited or held back from that pleasure, that's the shochad, Rav Elchanan Wasserman says. That's the shochad that makes it impossible to see things objectively. So even though it's crazy to think that there could be no creator, but the shochad, the we're really being bribed by our senses. We see something and we want it, we want to enjoy it, and we don't want to be held back. It creates all these elaborate rationalizations in our head that denies us of the basic truth of our judgment. So what are we saying over here? What we're saying is that we have to realize that when it comes to certain kinds of yetzaharas, certain kinds of desires and compulsions, the only answer is in basically complete abstention. It's very difficult to say, I'll just do a little bit, because what happens is the minute you begin to do the little bit, whatever that little bit is, whatever violation that is, even though it could be a very small violation, immediately the bribe takes hold. The bribe of the pleasure. And when that bribe takes hold, clarity of thought goes out the window. So Rashi says, it's impossible for the Dayan to see the truth anymore once he's bribed, no matter how smart he thinks he is. So once we enter into the zone of something that triggers us, and each person may need to figure out for themselves what that zone is. It may not be the same for each person, but once we enter into that zone that triggers us and that sets forth the desire, already all reason goes out the window and it's almost impossible to resist. The Nefesh HaChaim in Shar Aleph Perek Vav talks about the nature of man before the Chet Eitz Hadas and after the Chet Eitz Hadas, and he talks about that before man sinned with the Eitz Hadas, there was choice, even though if you look at the Pshut HaSom Mikra, it's really hard to understand exactly what that meant. But the way Rav Chaim Volozhin learns, man had choice. Man could choose good and evil, to sin, to not sin. But the desire, the Yetzihara, was somehow another external. Inside his soul, there was only good, and the wish to do good. It's true that he could encounter some kind of test. He could encounter some kind of external motivator for him to sin. But he himself was inherently good. There was no confusion about that. When the Nachash came to him, the Nachash had to come and somehow or another try to seduce him and try to convince him that he should take this course of action. once he did that, then his desire became aroused, and he chose Tifnei Sadas. But it never would come from the inside. However, after the chet, and this is what he says over here, after the chet, he says that, After the chet, the yetzer, the desire that tries to seduce a person, is inside himself. And here's an interesting sentence. He says, "Umizdame la adam," and it appears to the person, "Shuhu asmo hu harotze," that he himself wants it of his own volition. Whatever the sin is, it becomes to the person as if he wants it from himself. "Vanimshach lasas avon," and he wants to do it, and he's drawn to do it. "Velo she'achar chus mi'enu mefateyo," and not that somebody else has to convince him. And he talks about that the kochas hara become, the evil forces become intertwined within the soul of the person. The point is, this is the tricky piece here, that we reach a level of confusion where the bad things, they seem good, and we want them for ourselves, and we don't even feel that there's anything wrong with it. We feel that that's the way it should be. We don't feel that it's something external to us, inappropriate to us, right? So it's like for whatever reason, we're so conditioned to not consider eating treif. For many of us, the idea of eating a cheeseburger or eating a lobster, even though there are those who have told me that a lobster is indescribably delicious, I have no reason to doubt what they say. It's supposed to be an unbelievable taste, but most of us would probably not really feel much of a desire to have lobster. There's something about it that seems to be quite grotesque. The point is that state that we're in, we don't even want it, you know? We don't even want it. But when it comes to many averas, we want it really badly. And not only that, we feel it's appropriate. But the point being that there's a certain stage that you come to where there's the shochad, where there's the bribe, where the desire itself creates some kind of distortion in your judgment that you can't think clearly anymore. And the only thing that makes sense to do is to do the thing. Now, in a related way, somewhat different, but on the topic, at the end of the parasha, toward the end of the parasha, Perchav Pasuk Aleph, the parasha talks about going to war, and it says that when you go to war, the Kohen makes an announcement to the people that anybody who is afraid should turn back. Anybody who's committed who fears their avera should turn back. Anybody that just recently got engaged, erusin, which is a little more than engagement according to Jewish law, but betrothed or whatever you want to call it, anybody who built a new house or built a new field, they should all not go to war because they're going to, in some way, have a lack of faith and too much fear, and that's going to cause panic within the ranks, and they won't be able to receive the inspiration, the spiritual inspiration that it takes to fight the war and experience the nisim, the miracles. Anyway, the Orach Chaim over there says that actually this is a metaphor, that it's really talking about the Milchemes Ha'adam im Yitzro, the war that a man has with his own desires, and he's saying that you can't be afraid, that even though you fear that that you're not going to be able to succeed, but he says with Hashem's help, you'll be able to withstand the Yetzer Hara. Again, as we spoke about this theme in many of the other shiurim, and in the third step, right, that there has to be, there's a recognition that you're powerless without Hashem's help, but there has to be a willingness to have that help, a strong willingness for that help. So anyway, very similarly to a war, the weak people can't go to fight because they don't have the will. The ones that are not weak and the ones that are ready to fight and they trust in Hashem, they have the will and they'll succeed. What I thought was interesting was that the Or HaChaim doesn't explain the whole series of conditions afterwards, right? So he says at the opening, he says the opening pasuk about going to war against the enemy and don't be afraid, that's a metaphor for the Yetzer Hara. But then it goes on to talk about building houses and getting married and vineyards, all these things that a person who has them and is afraid of losing them and just, you know, built a new house and just got betrothed, he shouldn't go to war. So what's the connection? So I was thinking that perhaps this too is a part of the Milchama Sayetzer, is part of the war with the Yetzer Hara, meaning what are the ways to win the war? You can't just go out to war and just win it like that. No, you need to have completed. See, who can go to war? Not the guy that just got married, not the guy that just made a house, not the guy that just acquired a field, because he didn't complete his formation of character. Right, the one that's married a few years, the one that has developed his parnasa, the one that's developed his home, he doesn't have that same fear. He can go to war. But in terms of the war of the Yetzer Hara, maybe it's that way too, right? That who can realistically be victorious in this war? Who can be victorious in this war? So somebody that hasn't yet established his relationship, someone who's single, or somebody who just got married and has not yet established his shalom bias, someone who's not settled, who doesn't yet have a proper parnasa, someone who's not settled, doesn't yet have a proper home, it's almost impossible for them to fight the war and win. So you have to get things to, you have to take care of business. And I think that the psukim are along the lines of the Or HaChaim, they're being meramis to that. You have to take care of business. You want to win the war against the Yetzer Hara. Not only is it sur meira, that you have to stay away from the triggers that we spoke about, because once you get triggered, it's very hard to resist, but it's also asei tov. You have to have substance in your life, and you have to have meaning in your life, and you have to be grounded. And how do you do that? You do that by getting married, and you get married by going out on dates and being mishtadel and having significant relationships that are moving in the direction toward marriage, however that is, whatever you need to do. This is a very serious issue. People need to do that. And if you're married, you need to work on developing your marriage so that it's past the Shana Rishona. And I'm not talking about chronologically, because some people are living in their Shana Rishona for 10 years because they haven't developed their relationship beyond a certain point. You have to develop your relationship. You have to develop your parnasa. You have to develop your house. You have to have all the grounding elements of a developed person of responsibility. And when you have those things in place, then you have something to focus your energy on and to focus yourself that you have a chance to win against the Yetzer Hara. Without it, it's a very difficult battle indeed.